Can't Believe It's Not Butters brings you.
Phoenix City!
Welcome to Phoenix City for another week. Cam's here, Dave's here, Frosty's away. How are we doing, gents?
Still broken.
I'm good. I'm back.
Yeah. You're back.
I've been gone for ages.
Yeah, we've missed you.
Well,
Pat didn't even remember that I was gone, so.
Really?
Well, you just heard his introduction. It's like everyone's here. Oh, yeah. Except Frosty.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's because you haven't been out of sight, out of mind.
Wow, that's harsh.
It's accurate, isn't it?
Not really.
I didn't miss Dave. Did you miss Dave?
I did. Yeah, I missed Dave.
I didn't.
I missed his insight. I missed his smiling face. I missed his functioning limbs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
Tell us about your shoulder, Pat. I've already told everyone about my leg.
My shoulder's well dislocated.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us how you managed to do that?
Well, I was doing push-ups.
Yep.
Plural?
Yeah. The intention was more than one.
So how many successful push-ups did you manage?
There were zero successful push-ups. It was the first push-up that my shoulder just went pop. And that was fun. And then it put itself back in. And I was like, sweet, that's just a bit sore. And then I drummed all of Saturday night, which, as we'll get to, was relatively lots of drumming because things went well. And then Sunday it popped out again. And that was that. So,
what were you doing the second time? Or should I not ask that question?
It's so mundane. I was taking my pie out of the oven and it went. And I had to go off to the hospital because I was like, you know what? Doing it twice, probably not good. So,
calling me Mr. Glass. I mean, this is
didn't break any bones.
I didn't call you Mr. Glass.
But he also...
Frosty does.
Yeah.
And apparently a whole football team.
Yes.
With good reason.
Cricket team.
Oh, cricket team.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't call you Mr. Glass. Yeah. Anyway, I'm here physically, but not necessarily mentally.
Those are pretty impressive painkillers you're on then, isn't it?
So let's see how this goes.
It's probably just the way you didn't drive.
I offered the hosting duties to both of yourselves, and you both turned it down and tried to palm it off to each other.
Yep.
And so I remain the host.
Well, the only time I've hosted was the first appearance of a Phoenix head coach on Phoenix City.
Yeah.
And I did not do well.
The only appearance of a Phoenix head coach, I think.
Nope. Chris Greenacre has been on as a head coach.
When he was head coach, he was
on? He was head coach.
Okay, sorry. Sorry, Greeny.
End of last season.
He's perennial assistant, though, so I forgot.
Yeah. But no, when he was acting head coach at the end of last season.
All right, so, fair enough. Yeah. So that's a thing. I saw Dez this week, actually.
Yeah, he was at T-Dubs.
Yeah, he was at T-Dubs, and he was meeting some of the Phoenix lads as well. So I saw him on the street, but just down the road. So, yeah, that's a little piece of information for you. Yeah. Phoenix? We're talking about the Phoenix.
That's why we're here.
That's what the podcast is about. So, yeah,
well,
I think
it's called Phoenix City, but we do talk about other things if you wanted to start with something else.
It's not really much else to start with.
Sure, let's talk about the 3-2-1 over the Central Coast Mariners.
Yeah. Go for it, Pat. What were your impressions?
I thought we were terrible. I thought we were genuinely terrible.
For all 90? Really,
the first 45 was so bad that, yes, we managed to save it, but we saved it from stupidity from the Mariners, not necessarily us playing really well. And I think we were so bad in that first half that I'm still really worried. The problem is that I've been saying this for 8 games now, where I've said that we have shown signs of fragility, and at no point has anyone managed to beat us across those 8 games. So at some point, I'm going to need to say, actually, the team is doing what they need to do, and that is win the games that they need to win and draw the games that they probably should have lost. And they're doing that. So that makes it a little bit hard to criticise, but I thought we were absolute pants in that first half, and we got played off the park by far and away the worst team in the league.
I think Mariners have been quite unlucky up to this stage during their season. They have taken a lot of leads. They've had some mind implosions from a couple of players. Yeah, they haven't got the results that their performances have necessarily dictated.
I would say that that's not necessarily unlucky. I would say that's self-inflicted. I would say that shows a lack of headspace in the team to be able to do as a cohesive unit what they need to do to grind out a win. They have too many loose units going and getting themselves sent off or giving away penalties or own goals, making mistakes to give away goals. They've got too many of those people for it to be simply unlucky.
They feel... Or like we did under Ernie's first season, where it took us 10 games to get a win, 4 draws and 6 losses in that period of time. And that's exactly what the Mariners feel like at this point in time, where they're playing some decent football at times, but just the results are not going their way for whatever reason it happens to be. And you're right, there's, you know, they've got fragility and obviously some...
I think you're giving them far too much credit. Yeah. I don't think they've been playing good football.
I think they've snuck a few 1-0 leads and then they've managed to go and blow that quite significantly many times in the season.
I haven't said they're good by any stretch.
No, but
they're playing some decent football.
No, I don't think they have been. I think for the large part, they've been playing very poor football, but getting a few goals here and there. And it's been games where they've ended up with a lead, but only because other teams have been playing worse than them, and then they've got the wake-up call similar to us and sorted it out.
That was certainly the case on the weekend.
Well, and just to go back to what Patrick was saying before about the fragility we're showing, I agree with that, but I also think you're kind of forgetting that this is the A-League in some ways. No one goes through a season perfectly. Every team that wins the bloody thing still shows some fragility. And so I think going 8 games unbeaten while looking like we could be exposed is actually reasonably par for the course of a side doing well in the A-League, you know? No, it's been a long time since we've seen a side that just look like they can't be beaten. Even the kind of invincible Sydney FC during that season where they had a huge run still showed signs that they were beatable. It's just no one could quite do it. So while I agree we do look fragile at points, that doesn't worry me. I mean, 60% of the teams end up in the playoffs here. I think we look more than good enough to be safely in that by the end of the season the way we're playing, even if we are to drop a game sometime soon.
Were you worried watching the first half against the Gold Coast Mariners?
Well, so this was the thing. I think that's probably the worst 45 minutes of football we've played this season. I think it was terrible. But it was very different to how I felt about games earlier in the season, where my pain in this one was that I knew this was a very beatable Mariners side and we should be beating them. Whereas early in the season, my concern was that it wasn't going to turn around, that we were just going to be bad continually. Now I know we can be good, and it was kind of hurting watching us kind of throw away a game in many ways that we knew we were good enough and on current form were more than good enough to walk all over them. So my frustration wasn't that there was a blip. It was that we were, you know, slipping back into the old way of playing down to a bad team, which the Phoenix have done so many times in the past. And seeing that cycle kind of repeat itself was very frustrating as a fan. But a cycle that doesn't repeat itself often is us actually pulling a 2-0 deficit back to a 3-2 win. That's a rare thing. I think we've only done it twice, and it's both been against the Mariners. And that's nice to see, and it's the thing I was criticising Rudan for earlier in the season, saying we've seen him struggle to motivate the players at halftime. It was precisely the criticism I gave him, I think, even the week before I went away, was that we haven't seen him do that. And this week, we did. Whether it was because the speech was different or there was a bit more passion because he had finally seen the boys doing the business and this week they weren't, or whatever it was. But he clearly showed he does have that skill set to turn it around and, you know, give the boys a hose down if they need it. And I think that's precisely what happened. They came out with renewed vigor, but also belief that they could do it. And it changed a lot. But obviously they changed some personnel as well. I think Killian, since he's shown up, has looked the absolute business. I mean, I was there to watch him in his first appearance at Sydney, and I thought, shit, this guy is exceptionally good. How have we ended up with him? Every touch he was making was phenomenal, and then we see him come on after halftime. His first touch is the assist for the penalty, and, you know, you're going, everything he's doing, he's running good channels, he's playing good passes. I mean, we haven't seen him score a goal yet, but based on the shots we've seen, that's only a matter of time before he's banging a few in.
And to be fair, with the assists that he's creating, I'm quite happy to skip the goals if he's getting the two assists a game I think he's on at the moment, which is phenomenal.
I think having spoken to him, he personally will be a bit frustrated he hasn't got one himself. But as a fan, I agree. The service he's giving to the guys around him is more than good enough to justify a spot in there, you know. Yeah. And I think if the other guys were a bit more used to his play style, we probably would have got that third goal earlier than we did. He put some exceptional crosses in, and, you know, they were just, you could tell the guys around them aren't quite used to him yet. You know, Roy wasn't quite on the same page, and, you know, but once they are there, man, it's going to be good to watch.
Yeah, that's true. What do you reckon about, or how much do you reckon that first half performance was down to the exceptionally poor performance of Mitch Nichols and the fact that him and Copper have no relationship, and it showed they had no relationship?
It was the thing I talked about with a few people during the week. What did I think made the bigger impact? Mitch Nichols going off or Killian coming on?
And it's a great question.
It's a real hard one to answer because I think Killian was excellent and Mitch was fucking terrible. So it's a tough one to to balance out. But
it's a pity that we didn't see Killian against 11, because it would be a lot better impression to make. Because obviously, once they went down a man, the impact that he could have is much greater, because there's absolutely more space and more time, blah, blah, blah.
Well, we saw 40 seconds of him against 11 men, and he essentially won a penalty. So, I mean, that was something, right?
Yep.
He found the space and halfway and played a wonderful to Roy. And
So back to that question.
Can you imagine? But like, what do you think, Cam, about this performance? We were obviously very good in the second half. Do you think that the first half struggles outweigh the overall here and mean that we should be worried from the back of this performance?
I don't think we can actually take too much away from that, because in the second half we were quite good.
But against 10 men.
But against 10 men.
Against 10 men for the entire half.
Yeah. And also, I think our first half performance, the issues that we had were right through the spine, through the midfield, where Mitch Nichols had what has got to be one of the worst games I've seen from a full pro.
I mean, he dragged at halftime and sacked on Tuesday, but it's not a good performance.
No, it was pretty horrendous.
Mutual termination, thank you very much.
And then Copper did what he could, and I actually thought Copper did okay, but the downfall there was, again, there was little to no relationship there between Nichols and Copper. The space was just the number of times Nichols turned the ball over.
Yeah.
Can I ask you a question? Sorry to cut you off there, but can I ask you a question? I think I asked Adam in the middle of the Peter Zone on Saturday, which was, would you think that just placing a couch in the middle of the field would do a more effective job than Mitch Nichols did? Because Mitch Nichols was playing to the detriment of us by giving away the ball, doing things that others had to cover for, but he was there as a player. I think that he would have been much more effectual as us just playing with team men and not trying to cover his mistakes. I think a couch actually would have been more effective.
The point you make is a reasonable one, which should be concerning for him, but he wasn't winning tackles. I mean, I haven't checked the stats, but I'm pretty sure he didn't win a single one.
I don't remember
his turnover number was very high, and that's because, you know, he's in that central midfield, we're giving the ball to him, and he was just passing straight to opposition players. As you say, at least if there was a couch there, you probably wouldn't pass to the couch, so we'd at least have given it to a player who wasn't giving it away. So it's harsh, but the point you're making is fair, in that he actually did basically nothing of use to the team, and he did a lot to the detriment. If he'd at least broken up some play or won some tackles, maybe you could argue a couch wouldn't have done that. But I'm pretty sure, if you check the numbers, I don't remember him winning a single tackle. He went in for a few, and I don't remember him actually coming away with the ball in any of them. He might have got a touch on it, but back to one of their own players again. You know, it was frustrating to watch.
His poor turnover, his poor touch directly led to the second goal, because controlling from the Mariners player, one ball in, and all of a sudden they're in behind.
Oh, and it's not the first time either. It was much earlier in the season. Exactly the same
thing. The very first game against the Newcastle Jets. Mitch Nichols comes in to win the ball with no other player around him, completely misses it.
Yeah.
Bam, one pass later, Demi Pachados and scores. So it's not the first time we've seen it. I think, to answer your question about, is Mitch Nichols worse or Killian better? I think Mitch Nichols is worse, because at least with Killian, we knew that we had a competent footballer there, and doesn't matter who that person would be, just not having Mitch Nichols on the field would have made a big difference for us in the second half. So I think it was Mitch.
It also gave the Copper the understanding that actually he had to do it all. There was no one else there to rely on, and he just did it all.
That's better than having someone else there who keeps fucking it up, because you don't have the chance to get in there and do it properly.
Yep. Yep.
And that's the problem that Copper had in the first half.
Yeah. I'll give Nichols, again, he was trying to play an 8, and he's not an 8, he's 10.
He's not.
But even, you take another 10. If you take Max Burgess, I think he'd have done a better job doing an 8th role there than Nichols did. I can understand why he's gone for Nichols. The experience should have counted for an awful lot.
That's the thing. We've
seen him try him in there a couple of times, and it hasn't worked any time. I think if you're going to put him in there, you have to play slightly differently in the midfield. You can't be asking him to do that role. You need to go, Copper, you're sitting, and we're playing two higher midfielders, and it's a weird balance to be playing, but at least then Copper, again, knows he's the one guy back there doing all that work. And it gets congested up front, but at least Mitch knows what he's doing up there. But I don't think he's looked the same player that he used to.
He was signed, and he is, a seasoned A-League professional.
Yeah, and we didn't see that.
He should be able to slot into those different positions where needed, especially as a squad player.
Yes.
Especially someone who's going to be given a chance somewhere and needs to take that with both hands. He came out and was just awful. Yes, he has zero match fitness, which definitely showed, but he should still be better than that. We've seen Copper come back into this team with little match fitness and do a better job. Yeah. So I have no problems whatsoever with us releasing him. We signed him to do a job. He's clearly not capable of doing that, and actually plays to the detriment of the team, and I think getting getting rid of him at this point was a great sign for Mark Rodan.
Yep.
Shows everyone else on the team that if they don't pull their weight and they actively prevent the rest of the players from doing their jobs, they're going to be on the cutting block, which I think is a nice thing to see.
It shows how much I'd love to have had Vinny, basically. Love to have kept Vinny because him in that role over that weekend.
Vinny squad player, easy.
Exactly. With the experience that he's got around the squatters and training, we know he's a good professional. He'd have been perfect.
So. Back to this other game, the penalty that Stephen Taylor gave away, pen or no pen round
definitely,
the table?
Definitely
a pen. Yeah,
100%.
I agree.
Great decision.
It's soft. You shouldn't be giving those away, but it's a pen.
Exactly.
The decision's 100%.
Matt Simons tried to jump for the ball. You stopped him from jumping for the ball. Yeah. Pen. Easy pen. Yeah. The second goal. Just Mitch Nichols at fault here. I can't really fault anybody else. They had to scramble and try and do anything else.
I think, yeah.
Kurto got a hand to it, which took it away from Doyle running back onto the line.
Yeah, I think it's unlucky there. You can't blame Kurto for reaching for it because he doesn't know Doyle's there. And Doyle is covering where it's going and gets wrong-footed by the touch. And, and it's just one of those ones that wasn't anyone's day.
Yeah, but. Well, once the pass has been played to come through, which was a great pass. It was
very,
a
very nice
hole
pass.
That got played through, I think.
I think so, yep.
Yeah.
And it was a lovely turn inside to wrong-foot the defender as well. So it was a really nice goal.
Yeah.
Really well taken.
Yeah, and 2-0 again.
That first half, we only really had one period of about 5 to 8 minutes where we did some good stuff, and I think Krishna had a header save, a very good save by Kennedy, but good save, but one I'd expect to keep it at this level to make. But there was that period was pretty much all we had, and we created, I think, maybe 3 good opportunities, but nothing really clear cut. And Mariners looked comfortable for the lead the rest of the time, comfortable recycling the ball and keeping it.
That's one thing that's weird to note lately is that Roy's clearly been working on his heading. I mean, he's getting up and winning a lot more than we've seen at any point in his career. I mean, that's not a notable part of his game, and that was a great header.
It was a really good
header. He deserved the goal for it, really.
He did.
But we've seen him winning way more headers in the last 2 or 3 games than I've seen him win in the entire rest of his career, basically.
It feels like it's perhaps Rodan's identified weakness in his game and suggested, let's work on this because it'll make you a more complete player.
Yeah, I think probably other people have probably identified it as a weakness but not said you need to work on it. Gone, keep working on what you're good at and we'll know that we won't use you in that way. Whereas I think Rudan's gone, no, we want that. You know, we want that.
Make yourself a complete player. It's only good for the player if you can do all of those skills. So, yeah. So now going in 2-0 at halftime, whilst I thought we could definitely come back for a point, I thought, you know, if Rudan does give the blast that they deserve and they come out and play that the way they had been up to this point in the run they've been on, yeah, there definitely is a chance of a point out of this. Yeah. I didn't think we were going to get 3.
Once the red card happened, I was going to be disappointed if we lost that game.
Yeah,
And still disappointed if we didn't win it. I think playing 45 minutes against the worst team in the league, if we weren't able to convert that dominance, only one goal down at that point, a man up. If we couldn't find 2 more goals in 45 minutes, that was going to be extremely worrying to me. Mm. And we managed to do it, which is, I think, the par second half for us there.
Let's talk about that penalty, though. What is it from the defender's perspective that they haven't worked out what the rule is for double jeopardy?
I don't know. It just seems insane. It's such a dumb red card to give. Because if you're going to choose to hack him down as a defender, fine. But hack him.
Yeah,
don't grab him. Don't push him
over.
Do anything else. But if you slide in there and you catch him, which maybe is the right call to have made in that situation, maybe, you certainly don't give away the red card.
Yes.
Don't be an idiot about it. Just slide in on them.
Especially with 45 minutes to go and a season where your team has been destroyed by dumb red cards.
Yeah.
They are not new for the Mariners. Mm. And to do that was just absolutely stupid.
In a game where you're being the better side.
You're 2-0 up. What? Just take the penalty. Like,
straight out of the sheds.
Or let them shoot. Because you give your keeper a chance to save it. It's a harder chance than the penalty is, because penalties are very straightforward for attackers. Put it on target and you've got a 75% chance of scoring.
We've talked about this before. Arguably Wellington at home,
sure,
maybe you take the penalty.
Compared to a high speed chance where the defender brings down his back, it's certainly an easy chance, a penalty. Just let Krishna shoot.
Yep, shoot it.
2-1 with 45 minutes to go is better than 2-1 with 45 minutes to go with 10 men.
Entirely.
The only thing I can think is try to do is just not even touch him.
No.
But the instinct has kicked in and he's just tried to do something at the very last.
He has tried to pull him down or push him down. Yeah. There was definitely no attempt to play the ball. He's definitely tried to play the man. The red card decision was entirely accurate.
Do you know what's even stupider? The tackle for the second penalty. Roy is going
nowhere
towards the byline to just then jump in like that. That's dumber.
Okay, so
I think the second one, it's a genuine attempt to play the ball.
It is.
I like. 100%. I don't think he's just tried to make it look like a genuine attempt. I think it was a genuine attempt, and he gets there late, and that happens.
Roy's fractions of a second
takes it away from him.
Yeah, it's fractions of a second. When you look at the replay, Roy's towed the ball as the guy's tried to kick through, and he's taken out Roy. Yeah. But again, there's a reason why he didn't get a card, because there was no foul. There's no card worthy foul there. The foul was just a foul. He's tried to play the ball. He's not got a dog, so he's not going to shoot at that point because he's still getting the ball under control from his run. There was no foul. He shouldn't have played the ball, because once he's towed the ball through, he's not getting there further.
Yeah, I think that was dumber, because Roy's clearly going to do something there, and you've just launched in a position where Roy's not immediately about to shoot. If you've made a tackle that you don't necessarily need to make in a position where there are lots of other options to take, and I think that one was dumber.
Jocking him was,
especially given your team's already given away a penalty.
Sure. Jocking him was the better call than fouling him, but it's not as dumb as getting a red card you don't need to get.
Sure, fair. Yeah. But in game context, that was so stupid to give that penalty away and immediately 2-2.
Absolutely.
10 minutes after the break. Yeah. Like,
let's be honest, neither of those were good penalties from Roy.
No.
Neither of them. The first one, keeper's got a great chunk of, and he's got unlucky it sat at the inside of the post and gone in. Keeper's done everything he can, so be it. It's one of those things as a keeper. If you manage to save it in a penalty, great. If you don't, you know, so be it. But the second one, he's gone exactly the same spot, but gone with a lot more power, so he's beaten him for time. But both of those pens were at savable heights. Yep. You're giving the keeper a chance. Go low, go high, doesn't matter which, and try and get to the side netting, and you give yourself more chance of scoring.
Roy has yet to take a good penalty this season.
At least he's scoring them, I'll give him that, but it's still an area that the Phoenix as a whole just don't seem to be good at.
He's had one saved, which he then tapped back in.
Yeah.
But the rest of them have gone in, and I was talking to my name Boxy after the game, that until Christian actually misses one, we're never going to change to Sheridan. I think from what I've seen of Sheridan's YouTube videos, he's a much better penalty taker. Mm-hmm. If he's on the park, I think he should be taking them. But it's a fair point that until something changes, your informed striker who's banging him in front at the moment, he's never going to give up penalties willingly. So it'll take something different. But they're not good penalties, and they never have been. Never been his strength.
He actually does better by going the other way. So if you look at the penalties the three penalties I can recall this season at Westpac, he's gone the same way each time, and one of them was saved. One of them was saved onto the post and in, and the other one was scored. But the keeper went the right way. When he goes the other way and he rolls it in, which I think he did against Newcastle a season or two ago, much more likely to score. For some reason, he does better going right than he does going left. So
I was going to say that he should not his strength. Potentially, he needs to work on those along with his heading.
Mm. Well, his heading seems to be coming along quite nicely, so maybe some more time on penalties.
He's certainly fine in active play, which we saw for the third goal.
Yes.
Takes the ball through two or three players and then does get a little bit of a lucky deflection right into the path of Willow, but still gets a deflection, who absolutely roofed it. There was no saving that one.
Now, apparently he said to Piney after he stabbed it home, but I'm looking at the photo I got of him hitting the ball, and the ball is deformed in the photo. He's hit it so hard. So he's got all of that.
It was some thump.
Yeah, it was. It was a lovely finish.
He would have looked a right idiot if he'd missed it.
Yep.
that's the gamble you take with roofing it like that. When it goes in, you look like a genius who's just smashed it home confidently.
Yeah.
When it sails well over the bar, you get the big old Eeyore.
Yeah. So when we went 3-2 up, I think we deserved to be 3-2 up. The balance of play in that, was it 15 to 20 minutes in that second half?
It was all Phoenix.
All us. And a lot more dominant in that 15 to 20 minutes than the Mariners were in the first half. So we thoroughly deserved it. But from that point on, they came back into the game.
They did.
Quite well. And very, very late, they scored from that very close offside call. Well, I seem to recall it being quite close offside. Yeah. Correct decision, but definitely the lino got it right.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no way VAR would jump in and overturn this, especially on the shit angle that they have from that camera there.
Yep.
There's just no way that unless the ball's almost right back on halfway, you're going to get in line with it. So it was a pretty easy one to stick with the on-field decision either way. Mm. I can't tell from the replay if it's onside or off. So I'm going to go with what the AI called and suspect that they probably got it right. So,
And that probably robbed the Mariners of a point they probably deserved.
There was a,
But do you know what? You win games you shouldn't win, and that's how you win leagues, right? As simple as that. If you can play absolute rubbish and come away with a 3-2 win and on a 25 to 30 minute stretch of good football, you take that.
I feel a bit bad celebrating this like a classic Phoenix victory, because we did it on the back of two Mariners dumb mistakes and a deflection goal. And while it is nice to see a Phoenix team actually being able to turn around a performance like that. I feel a bit wrong about celebrating it like that was awesome. That was a big 3-2-1. I remember the last time we beat the Mariners 3-2, mm-hmm. where we really fought our way back into that and Kenny Cunningham scored in the 93rd eight. Minute.
Yeah.
That felt like that was one of the best 3 points we've ever won. This one didn't feel like that to me.
No, I think the good thing about this was it created such an amazing atmosphere in the second half. So because we were so dominant and we scored goals quite quickly and the crowd really bought into it in that second half, it was fantastic. So the zone deserves a lot of credit there. There was a lot of noise coming out of there. I can understand why your shoulder's a bit fucked, to be honest, mate, because there was a lot of noise. It was fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one because I think in some ways you're right, but I think, and to use a terrible cliche I hate, the thing that I like about this is that we were the team who wanted it more. Definitely in that second half, we came out and we looked like we weren't going to take it lying down. We weren't just going to stop at this 2-0 nonsense. We were going to come out there and try and win this game. And we did. And so while it wasn't in terms of the actual goals being the most amazing goals we've ever seen, we were pressuring them and we were creating stuff. And, you know, there was that cross quite late in the game that Sheridan puts across that just rolls through everyone. You know, goals like that are the ones we should have scored. Mm. And they were still there in the game. They're just not the ones we did score. So I don't take anything away from the fact that, you know, that red card was just stupid for the Mariners, because it was a magic ball that that Killian had put through. You know, we were pressuring them. We were creating that stuff ourselves. The end product might not have been the prettiest, but it all counts the same. And it did feel important in the context of this season and showing that even from behind, we do have that belief and that desire and that drive to still win these games and believe that we can do this. You know, we look like a top six side, and we're not going to let ourselves drop out of the top six just because we're two goals behind. And that gives me a lot of confidence for how the rest of the season's going to go. So I think in that context, I still take a lot from it, but I agree, you know, that other 3-2, you know, we actually scored some good goals and there was some much nicer football in there. But they all count the same, right? This is 3 points that we almost biffed away.
Yeah, and you know what? It was a great weekend to do it with the crowd that they had. The likelihood are you going to grab a few more Fairweather fans to come back to the next game? Well, not the next game, probably because it's midweek, but the one after is quite high. It was exactly the game where actually this is one. Do you remember when we lost 5-0 to Hart?
Yep.
In exactly this kind of situation with a 10 grand giveaway, and we lose 5-0. It had that kind of feel to it at halftime. It really could have gone
that way.
I was
just laughing because that's classic Phoenix. Get a crowd in and biff the game away.
Exactly.
We were literally joking about this in the zone during that first half. We're like, of course this is what's happened.
Yeah. And I walked in there thinking the Mariners would win purely because milestone game, decent crowd, lovely weather, great run of form, where this is exactly what the Phoenix does. And the fact that they didn't, and they fought hard in that second half, and they grabbed the passion out of those people and, you know, got that crowd going, it was fantastic. And that we need more of that moving forward. I think that they chose – I think they didn't choose, obviously, but it was the right game for this to happen.
I think the crowd would have preferred a 5-0 win.
Everybody would have preferred, but there wouldn't have been the atmosphere of us if we were 5-0, winning that 5-0 as it was coming back from 2-0 down and – producing some good football in that second half and getting those people to get engaged.
And I know this isn't entirely true, but a lot of that crowd who come in, that kind of non-regular support, actually watch these games a lot like a neutral. I think as a neutral, this was quite decent watching. You know, it had excitement, it had all those elements, it had penalties and, you know, some controversial decisions and red cards and stuff. And I think from that perspective, if you consider watching it like a neutral, this actually was a really good spectacle. Whereas a 5-0 win for a neutral often isn't a good spectacle. You know, as a fan, absolutely. But I think we have to remember that a good portion of that crowd are not really Phoenix fans. They're just there to watch a game of football. I mean, obviously we want to convert them to Phoenix fans for sure, but they're not there yet. They're just like, it's a sunny day, there's sport on.
That's fair. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
Jura, 300 games. Nice to get a win for him. And I don't think any other player in a milestone has ever had a victory.
No, we've lost every single milestone game. I actually asked him after
the
game.
How do you define milestone game?
Like
I'm sure that 100
or 200. Or 100.
Okay. Yeah, like 100.
It's not entirely true because the only one that we have actually won was Daniel's 100th game.
I don't remember.
Which we won 1-0 like away to the Newcastle Jets on the back of a Manny Muscat goal.
Yeah.
But his appearance in that game consisted of about 64 seconds at the end of the second half of time-wasting sub. So you don't really count that. When he came back to Wellington and had his 100th game celebrations here, Yeah, we lost that. So,
yeah, we don't need to win them. So I had a chat to Jura after the game, and because they talked about, you know, someone want to do a shirt presentation and all that kind of stuff. He said, nope, we're treating this exactly like a normal game because every other time we do this, we are pants. Yeah. So, and because his girls wanted to come out, walk out with him, from fair enough. And he said, nope, they're not coming out. No presentation, normal game. Do what you want after the final whistle, but not before, which is why they did the stuff afterwards. And I actually think that's quite a smart decision.
Better way to do it.
If you do the things you've always done.
We've always joked about what if after the shirt presentation they'd slip on the concrete in the tunnel and smash their head open and never actually get there.
Yeah.
So while we prefer that not to come true, right, it's good that the players have recognised that they should just do what they always do and not change anything.
This is a funny thing that I've just been reminded of. one of the Mariners fans who I happened to be in Gosford on New Year's Eve, so I was hanging out with some of the guys there.
Oh, that was the best game ever, right?
That was its own whole thing. I assume you talked about it on the pod separately, but I haven't had a chance to listen back yet. But anyway, so one of the guys I met over there was Pete, and he was actually over here for this game. And I did like this from the Mariners in that they sent him a message on Twitter during the afternoon telling him that he was their reserve player. If two guys went down injured, he'd be sitting on the bench. I was like, that's quite funny from the official account. He's like, don't worry, I've got my boots. And he actually did have his boots with him. just as happenstance, the way he was traveling, he had boots with him. He's like, sweet. If two players go down injured in the warm-up, I'm in.
That's outstanding.
That's quite funny. And your replacement player, I guess.
Well, who knows? I assume in reality you wouldn't be able to actually do that, but I like that as a thing of an away game where you know you've only got, you know, five fans there or whatever going.
Yep,
you're the designated player.
Isn't that why we all wear our replica shirts for the game? Just
exactly,
in case
exactly.
They get an injury warm-up and the coach goes, fat boy over there looks like he could do a job. Yeah. Then we get
and
to
so,
go on.
And so much as their club have been largely trashed for the season, I'll give them some credit for that because I think that's quite funny. I don't know if that's a regular thing, but it was for this game.
That's some outstandingly quick transfer paperwork to get that thing working.
The rest of the game, since we last potted it, we can't really talk about rounds because rounds don't really exist at the moment.
Oh, it's so weird.
Yeah.
While I kind of like having football to watch on weeknights, it's so annoying trying to figure out what the hell's going on.
Yeah, I think we haven't even finished round 12 yet and we've jumped to round 16 and it's weird. I think that we didn't talk about Adelaide's 2-0 win over the Victory since we last potted. I think we might have been potting that night, but Adelaide surprised everybody by winning that. Perth Glory did the job against Sydney FC in a top-of-the-table clash. This was last week now, a week ago. Melbourne City had a 1-0 win over the Roar, scraped through after our game on Saturday. The Victory dispatched the Jets 2-1. Sydney FC returned to form with a 2-1 win over Adelaide United, and then the Western Sydney Wanderers bottled a 3-1 lead against Perth Glory to lose 4-3, which is even worse than the Mariners.
Yeah, we had another one since then as well.
Yeah, there was a game last night.
Mariners. Oh, yeah, there we go. Victory beating Brisbane Roar 5-0 away from home.
Yeah, and
the Mariners beating Melbourne City 2-1.
Yeah. To get there, that was quite an interesting story actually. So the winner came very, very late to a penalty.
You've seen this penalty?
Yeah,
it was horrendous.
Yeah, no pen, eh?
No,
like, not
absolutely
a penalty.
Horrendous call.
They VR checked it as well, and because I was watching on a semi-legal stream that wasn't of the highest quality.
Yeah.
And even when they're showing the VAR replays, I'm going, that still doesn't look like a pen. What?
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, it's upheld. I'm like, oh, it must just be the poor quality of what I'm watching. There must have been something there.
No,
but I was there going, this is surely not a pen.
Yeah. I'm going to let it stand purely because it's a great result for us. And it's nice that the Mariners got their first win, not against
part
us.
Part of me wanted the Mariners to take the record off the Knights.
Yeah.
That would have been
that
nice.
That was the only other thing I wanted to happen here.
They're level with them, aren't they? Is that right?
They would have gone level on if they lost this game.
If they'd lost, okay.
Yeah. Because if they lost 10 in a row up to this point, the Knights have lost 11 in a row, and they won it. But
they were also sitting on the longest streak without a win at home or something as well.
Like that,
another
Knights result. So,
yeah.
In fact, the Knights have got a lot of those.
Yeah,
correct. Which is why it would have been nice to see a few moves somewhere else.
Yeah.
But it is good for the Phoenix now to see the Mariners taking points off teams like that.
I've seen a lot of people... the Melbourne Victory Newcastle Jets game was a good example of this. People saying, oh, it was good that the Jets lost because then we're further ahead of them. And actually we're at the point in the season now where I don't care about what's behind us. We should be aiming ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
And we should be aiming to knock off Victory, City.
Which is why I was happy City lost.
Exactly. It's here. And then we should be looking to knock off Sydney and then Perth. And we shouldn't be looking behind us anymore.
We want teams below us taking points. That's good. Especially if they're as far behind as Mariners.
And I can understand why people are going, we want the teams below us to not catch up to us because we wanted to get some playoff football. But the way the team's going now and the way that our season could go, we want the teams above us to drop points. And we
So
I don't care about the bottom four anymore. We have made the playoffs, as far as I'm concerned.
Yep, so my first target was 36 points, right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm targeting now.
We're almost there, essentially.
We've got
26.
22 we're on at the moment.
Oh, 22.
So we need another 14 in the next 14 games. Yeah. Of those 14 games, 8 are against the current top four, of which 4 of those are our next 4 games. So the next 4 games probably the single most crucial part of our season, because to come away from that even with 4 points from those 4 teams almost cements us into the playoffs. To come away with none would be a really bad return and put us back in with looking at 6th place. But to come away with more than about 6 or 7, that puts us in a chance for top 4.
I don't even think we worry about making the playoffs anymore. We want to come top 3. That should be the goal at this point.
Well, I'm still get to 36 points, and then we can chat about how high we finish. But once we get to 36, which invariably in most seasons is enough to make the playoffs, and this year I think it's probably going to be less going off what those teams down the bottom are doing.
Fewer.
Sure. So once we get to there, then we can chat about where we're going to end up.
But I don't care if the Jets lose. I don't care if the Jets win. If they beat someone ahead of us, that's awesome. So
now, if they beat someone ahead of us, yes. 4 or 5 games ago, no. But now, because of where we are and how we've been doing, I totally agree.
This week we have Melbourne Victory on Sunday night over at Amy Park. It must be Amy Park, not Marvel. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure
it's Amy.
We'll get to Amy. This is the first of those 4 games that we want to get something from. How do we think we're going to go around the table? This is how I host now.
It's a tough one.
I think we, similar to when I was over there only a few weeks ago, you're going to Melbourne the most confident we've probably ever gone to Melbourne. You know, normally you're going, well, we're coming away with nothing here. Us away to victory is 3 points to victory every time. We've shown we can do it over there, though. And I think Victory will take us a lot more seriously than they have previously, because this is not a free game for them like it has been in the past. So I think realistically we probably come away with a draw again, but I think we're going to worry them. I think this is a game that could go either way. And so I think it's going to be a really interesting watch.
Yeah. They're coming off the back of that 5-0 win over Raw, but it does give us an extra 3 days rest between the games. Yeah. So they're going Tuesday to Sunday, whereas we're going Saturday to a week Sunday. Mm.
So I think
we get the harsher run the following week.
Exactly.
Yeah, we've got Sydney midweek. Yeah. So I think the last game, I think Victory probably took us a little lightly.
Yeah.
Because we were in the middle of that really good run that we've had, rather than, you know, to start and
The Victory game kind of kicked off the good part of the good run. Yeah.
That was our last really good performance, and then we got some really good points away from.
But up to that point, we had played teams that were lower than us, apart from Perth Glory
and Sydney.
Weren't in the run. It wasn't a run yet. It was just a few good games in a row.
Yeah, that was the fifth. That was the fifth game, basically. Yeah. So to get that point was good, but we played really well in that game, and I think we played well, and the Victory didn't play as well as they can do, and that showed in the final result. I don't think that's going to happen this time. I think the Victory is going to be very wary of us. Enough so that they win it probably 2-1. Oh, is Honda back yet?
No.
And we have Killian now.
Yeah, so I'm still going to stick with
our midfield returns. This is the thing for me. Like, against the Mariners, we looked fragile, but we also largely were showing our complete lack of depth in midfield. Our midfield's back, and we've got Killian. I think that probably balances out the fact they'll be taking us a bit more seriously this time. I think it's going to be a very evenly matched game. I think if they have Honda, that would probably tip it back towards me going, they win this.
Yeah.
But as it stands, I think it's going to be pretty balanced.
I think he's still well out injured. So
yeah.
They don't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I'm still going to go with, I think home ground advantage makes us a 2-1. I think now that we've got the record that obviously the guy started thinking about probably after the 5th or 6th game in that really good run, I think we might go into this one a little more relaxed. I think it's probably going to cost us the points. I think this will be where that run ends.
I think that a point here is good for us.
A point, any points out of this game is fantastic.
And I'm happy with a point here. Then we can target the Sydney game. Back here is the one that we want to win.
And that one I think we can.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that quickly, because we're not going to have another pod out before then, I don't think.
I think in terms of motivating the team, Rudan will be talking up this is a must-win 3 points, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I think behind the scenes he'll be thinking, let's target 3 if we come away with 1. Great.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they're only 4 points ahead of us. So when you get to the stage of the season, they're only 4 points. You've got to give them up. You've got to give yourselves every chance of getting those points off them.
Yep. Big 6-pointer, as everyone would say.
I don't think so. Not yet. Not in this. Not at this.
It's never a 6-pointer. Don't say not yet.
It's not a 6-pointer yet.
Could we argue the Mariners game was? They had 3 points in the bag.
Yeah.
Nope.
That live table on
hates
Fox.
That term so much, doesn't he? <know. laughs> But no, I think. Yeah, I think it's going to be a big game for us, mate. And if we manage to get anything out of this, it's huge.
I reckon we target the Sydney game afterwards, which I think we have a good chance of getting something out back at home.
The next four, I think the games that we will have a chance at are Sydney and City.
I'm trying to like segue into, let's talk about the Sydney game a little bit, because we're not going to pod before then.
Ignore that.
And you keep pushing ahead and pushing behind.
We literally just talked about how we're going to pod on Tuesday ahead of that.
No, we didn't. But we didn't bank it. We didn't lock it in.
He's really, really drugged up,
isn't he? Anyway, you're talking about what game Rudan's going to target. We've all seen his interviews. He targets every game. There's no way he's talking about we're only going to target this one game. He targets every game. Mm. He is wanting 3 points from all four of these top four teams we're going to play. I don't think in his mind at all he's thinking we take this one a little lightest, we're better for Wednesday. I think this, he goes all out, and Wednesday he does too. Mm. I just don't see that in the way he talks, the way he acts. Anything to do with my dealings with him suggests that he's not targeting every single game.
Yeah, because he knows if he gets 9 points in the final trip out to Perth as the absolute killer, if you drop a game in Perth, and you drop a game in Perth, it's not a big deal, but you still go hard on these three and try and get 9 points.
Yeah. Imagine that.
Oh, God, that'd be lovely. I'll take six, but I'd love to see more.
I'll take five. Yeah. One win and two draws.
Take four, to be fair.
The rest of this weekend's games are the Wanderers taking on Adelaide tomorrow night, 9:50 p.m. Tomorrow would be Friday, as you listen to this. Sydney FC taking on Newcastle Jets is the early game on Saturday. Melbourne City taking on the Glory. Probably want the Glory to win that, right?
If you think Glory are unreachable,
I think
you definitely want Glory to win.
Yeah, we want to finish ahead of Melbourne City. So, and then
there's a lot of the season to go, boys. Then no one's unreachable.
Central Coast take on Brisbane Roar, which we do not care about whatsoever, and will be a terrible game of football to watch.
Central Coast versus Brisbane.
Are Central Coast the favourites there? At home against the Roar, who have just lost 5-0,
and going off how they played, where they did okay against us, and they just beat City.
I just think the favorites.
Did you watch the City game? They were dog shite.
Oh, no, I didn't see it.
They were just terrible. Melbourne were all over them and just couldn't score. Yeah. They finally got the equaliser and then kept pushing for the win and looked like they were going to get it for all money, and then managed to biff it away with the softest of penalties in added time. It was unbelievable. If you're a Mariners fan, you're at this game, you probably were, you know, getting excited and thinking maybe you had a chance at points there, but City were all over them. Mm. The first goal, very good goal, though, I'll give them that.
Yep.
The good goal for Mariners.
That was Connor Payne, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Handy Prem. Let's jump back there.
Speaking of being all over someone and not being able to score.
Well, I saw two games this weekend. The first was Eastern Suburbs taking on the
Pat's love life.
just going to move on from that. Eastern Suburbs.
How'd you hurt your arm?
Dispatched the Weenix 4-0 in a fine performance from them. The Weenix didn't really show much.
Yeah. Well, up to the first goal from Easts, they were in a little bit. They had a bit more play, but once that first goal went in from Easts, it was one way traffic.
It was two double salvos from Eastern Suburbs that bang bang, and then in the second half bang bang, and all of a sudden it was 4-0. And take away those two 5 minute periods of the game, and Eastern Suburbs were on top, but not cutting them open. But you put those back in, and Eastern Suburbs were on top and scoring, and it was fine.
To be fair, mate, after the first two goals went in, Eastern Suburbs were just going to take the opportunities that came up.
Which is
typical of a Declan way of playing, because the nil is just as important as the two.
Yeah. And the other game that we saw was Team Wellington playing Waitaki United, and Waitaki winning that one 2-1, the one coming very late on, I think at 93rd minute, almost the final kick of the game. In a game where they scored two goals and then defended, and I don't know how Team Wellington didn't score before the 93rd minute here.
Because the keeper for Waitaki had a blinder.
There was an insane,
he was phenomenal.
Insane number of chances for Team Wellington, and they just could not score. Hit not for the
crossbar
one
twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First one saved on the crossbar, which was a great save.
Yeah, and then he made a follow-up save to that save as well.
Yeah.
So he saved it onto the crossbar, got up, and then dived back the other way to make a save on the follow-up. He was fantastic.
Yeah.
Honestly, he was by far and away the man of the match, and one of the best handed premiership goalkeeping performances I have ever seen.
Yeah.
He was phenomenal.
One of those days with T-dubs.
I haven't seen this game, and I don't want to take anything away from that. But having not listened to the podcast for the last 3 weeks, have you guys been talking about how good Curto's been? Because he has been phenomenal.
Very much so.
Yeah, we have.
And as long as we've covered that,
talking up his unnecessary dives, because we all think it was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, I know, absolutely. This week he didn't really have much to do.
Earlier in the season have been talking about how import slot on a keeper seems a weird decision. No. He is worth everything
I've literally
been on him.
Yeah, yeah, I've literally said the words worth an import slot and more.
Yes.
So, yeah. Happy with that.
Cool. As long as that was covered.
So T-Dubs have looked, I feel like they've got a hangover. They
their best game of the season by far was in the UAE.
Yeah, they were phenomenal in that. Yeah, and they just got back, and it's like they just haven't managed to get out of the traps. And
it's that situation of having played their final already.
Yeah,
that Club World Cup game was their final, and they played it.
Yeah,
they played it very well and got defeated sadly. But that for them was the thing they've been targeting for a long time, and obviously Jose and that will have been trying to work on keeping them up and motivated for the other games. But as a player, and I'm sure as a coaching staff as well, that was your final. And, you know, it's going to be hard to get back up to the level you were at again straight away.
And that's exactly how it feels. It just, it's a shame actually that they had the break when they did, because another game when they got back to get straight back into it probably would have done them the world of good.
Yeah,
because they did get lucky the previous week to win, and then they were unlucky in this one. But the performances they were putting in prior to going to the UAE were much better than what we saw.
Yeah, but they're still not getting necessarily all the results then.
No, but look, you know what? They're missing Andy Bevan. That's very obvious.
Absolutely.
What he brings to that side in creativity and work rate is huge.
No Bevan, no party, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it kind of feels that way at the moment.
Yeah. They do get their catch-up game against the Wenix, which at the very least should be the chance to get some confidence back.
But they're still going to fall behind Easts after the loss of
Totally.
Waitak. So they're looking at, they need to take points off Auckland City, they need to take points off Easts to finish in that second place.
If you want to finish second, but I don't think that's the realistic target anymore. The target is just consolidate a place in the top four and see what happens from then on.
Second place gives you that Champions League slot?
No, you just won the final.
Against Auckland City?
Yeah, easy.
Yeah, sure. Auckland City undefeated, 9 from 9 or 10 from 10, whatever it is. Best defence in the league. Haven't looked like losing a game.
Isn't that the best time to meet them in the final?
It'd be lovely, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you still need to get points off those other teams.
Sure.
I think second place is important this season, because I think Easts are a very, very good side.
Easts or Wests?
I think they're calling themselves both.
Are they actually?
Actually, yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, the Western Suburbs account, I think, is tweeting out how they're playing and when their games are. So they got 7?
We counted at one point that there was only 2 non-Western Suburbs players on the field for Eastern Suburbs.
I recognised a few. Not all of them, but I did recognise a few.
And those 2 players were both all whites. So,
It says a lot.
Well, former all whites, at the very least. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a thing. That's probably the pod this week. Unless anybody has any pressing matters that they would like to raise at the table, like Philip Curta, if you want to talk more about him.
I want to talk about Shep.
Shep, sure. Let's talk about
Blake's podcast. Go on.
I haven't listened to this week's episode, but I think it's called Mr. Sherry.
It's called Mr. Sherry.
He's now launched season 2 of his podcast.
Indeed. And so the first episode came out today. I've had a listen. It's a good listen.
Yeah.
He is a very friendly guy. I had a chat to him in Adelaide before he was, at that point I was asking if his transfer had come through, and he said it hadn't yet, but he was hoping he could play the next game, and then he did. He seems like a really nice guy, and his podcast is well worth a listen. I think based on episode 1, it's going to be quite entertaining, although he does note he was obviously in Poland before, and he was like, it was quite nice because he could talk about stuff, and most of the Polish people wouldn't bother listening to an English language
understand it.
Podcast, but obviously here he's well aware that a lot of locals are going to be listening, so he's like, this week I'm going to try and be good, and he's like, I won't swear, and he does a few times anyway, and you know, I think it's going to be well worth a listen. Yes. I think it's going to be nice having that kind of additional personality around the club.
We are trying very hard to try and get a Mr. Sherry Phoenix City crossover going on.
That'd be fantastic. Us on his on ours. That'd be brilliant.
Yeah, we have put in the request with the Phoenix to have him on the podcast. So hopefully they come through with that. Or I guess if you're listening, Shep, you want to come on the pod, just have a chat to the club and we'll sort that out, because we listen to your podcast. So surely he's listened to ours. That's how this works, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He'll definitely appreciate that we've calling him Shep now as well.
He's the shepherd.
Yeah.
Mr. Slatty said that he has to be called the shepherd, so the shepherd he is.
Yeah.
We'll leave that there this week. Thank you so much.
I want to talk about how we're not going to sign Essien.
We're not going to sign Essien, so there's nothing to talk about there. Easy. That's all we're talking about there.
I'm pretty disappointed about that, to be
fair. Well, it's never going to happen.
I know, but that doesn't mean I'm not allowed to be disappointed.
Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't.
Don't get your hopes up.
Who are we signing instead?
We're signing anybody.
We have to sign a midfielder.
Well, it has to be a new
We also have to sign someone to meet the minimum squad requirements again.
Oh, do we?
Yeah, because we got rid of two guys.
Correct. Ruben Way's mutual termination is post-dated the last day of the month.
Yeah.
That technically he's still on the squad until we sign the new person to reach the minimum again. So we have to sign at least one. You'd say it's going to be a midfielder at least. Well, but ideally, we're signing a couple.
It has to be a New Zealander or an Australian. Who's available is the question.
Or a guest player.
I don't see us doing that.
I don't see it either, but it's a possibility.
I think that's much harder to try and get across the line, especially given you have to meet so many criteria. I think it's much more likely that we just sign Justin Gully, for example. So that's probably who I'm think world's on to sign. He's playing football, but he's on the level that we know is good. I think he'll be our player, defensive cover. So,
And he's started his career in midfield, so at a push he can play defensive midfield as well.
Yeah, at a push in the alley. I don't think he plays.
Neither do I.
I think that if someone gets injured in the back line, then he potentially becomes the cover. So.
Do you think he takes that contract?
I think he takes that contract.
To not play? I don't know.
I think after having played Club World Cup, like that would have been the goal. And
yeah, I think preseason Club World Cup is a reason he doesn't take it.
I suspect that's why he didn't sign for us in the off-season. I don't know for certain, but I suspect that the Phoenix tried in the preseason, and he said, look, the offer that you put on the table for me to be a squad player isn't good enough. I want to go and play with my team that I've fought for the last 4 years. Mm. I think now that's changed. I think now he'll go, cool, I'll take out this contract for 6 months. Let's see what happens.
So. That's a point. 100th game for him on the weekend for Team Wellington, second highest appearance maker.
Pretty good effort given the season for a long time was 14 games a season, and now it's 18. That's impressive to get to 100. So
yeah, and in the playoffs, obviously he's looking at
which two games a season.
Yeah, but we made the last 5 years, which is 100 games effectively. Yeah. So but they're also be including the Champions League games, so that's where it's probably got over the line.
Yeah.
So that's a huge jump. Only Carl Whalen has played more games, and he played forever.
Yeah, yeah, he really did. So yeah, I think he would be. I think he might take it up if it gets offered. So,
I think we're going to see an Australian State League player again.
That's a fair shout as well. Someone they don't know about.
Well, and Rudan's showing he seems to have an eye for picking some of them. The guys he's brought in have looked pretty handy.
Ruben
and they're names we haven't heard of before.
Yeah. Wade's
injured, but he did look decent in the performances we saw.
Yeah.
I mean,
the injury does change things.
All right. But Burgess, same.
Yeah, true. I'm going to wrap that up before we go over an hour. So thank you very much for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week. Maybe before the game.
Maybe twice.
Maybe not before the game. Maybe once.
Probably
maybe
not
twice
before the game.
Maybe not at all. Maybe we'll just have a week off. So we'll see how our limbs go in the meantime. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.
Not letting Patrick finish the podcast brings you.
Patrick as high as a kite brings you.
Not as mad as I was earlier in the week.
Dislocating your shoulder, drumming at the Phoenix brings you.
I wish it was.
Yeah. That'd be properly taking one for the team. Foundation members winning 30K brings you.